I just can't have any social life right now.
Don't worry about it. We're just having coffee. We'll be antisocial.
Hello and welcome to Damn Fine Espresso. I'm once again joined by Alan. Hey, Alan.
Hello.
And we are doing a bit of a kind of look back at 2022. Because in August 2022, we had our Summer of Directors going on, and Alan suggested that at that time that we do an episode on Robert Altman. So we are going back to this because of a certain specific thing, namely that our cinema, the Rex Cinema in Bern, has just had a retrospective on Robert Altman and his films. And we've been rewatching a number of his films, and we wanted to get back to that conversation. So, Alan, let's just perhaps start with you. Have you watched any Robert Altman in the last 3 years?
I've done slight rewatches of the films I really enjoyed watching for the podcast. I think I'm very much, I would still classify myself as Altman skeptic, but a positive Altman skeptic. So there's definite films I feel a lot more favourable towards, like Nashville, I've rewatched. I think it skews towards the earlier stuff. I think I tried rewatching The Player, and I think I got slightly bored and wandered away. But yeah, so in and out, but it's not he's never been a go-to director for me. How about yourself?
I think it's still the same, although I would definitely say that I feel much more positive towards him than I used to, because as we discussed at the time, his films are, for some strange reason, I tend to bounce off them the first time I watch them. And the second and third time I see them, I suddenly realize, okay, this is what the film is doing, which still doesn't automatically mean I like them. Like, for instance, The Player, I think it's okay, but it definitely still doesn't grab me because its cynicism and satire seems a bit perfunctory almost. But obviously there's Nashville, there's The Long Goodbye, there's McCabe and Mrs. Miller, which I've come to love by now. Same with Gosford Park. I think we also talked about that at the time. And that also, the very first time I saw it back at the cinema, it didn't do much for me. And since then, I've come to really, really like it.
No, I had almost exactly the same experience. I saw it in the cinema when it came out and left pretty much disappointed. And then a few years later, it started on the telly. And I thought, oh, I'll start watching it. A bit, I had nothing better to do, and was completely hooked by it. Absolutely swept along, got to the end and absolutely loved it. And I think, you know, if you're in the right wavelength for some of his films, I think they land. And if you're not, if they're not what you're expecting it to be or what you want out of it, then they just feel just completely alienating and often infuriating.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I think for me, it's very much this weird blend that he often has of satire, obviously, and also cynicism, but he still seems to care about the characters, and sometimes he cares even about the worst of his characters. And he does so in a way that took me a long time to kind of understand and kind of warm to, I would say. I also had that the first time I watched Nashville, I just saw the cynicism, and it kind of put me off. But by now, I think there's a richness there, but it's a richness that you have to accept that Altman is doing what Altman does. And I think what he does is very different from, I would say, pretty much any other filmmaker I know.
Yeah, I mean, I think we covered this a few years back. I struggle sometimes because I think Altman has too much contempt for his leading characters. I think he will show characters satirically at their stupidest and at their worst, but doesn't want us to sympathize with them. I think he wants us to actually dislike them because the satire requires us to dislike them. And I often find that a little bit too obvious and overt. And I miss sympathizing for horrible people or for stupid people in his work. I think he doesn't like them. There's an element of contempt, I think. And I think if I'm in the wavelength where I pick up on that contempt, then it does put me off the film. Because you're bullying Shelley Duvall in Nashville. Come on, like what are you doing? Like, he clearly has no time for her, I think. And yet, it feels, obviously there are people like this, but do they deserve this level of, it feels to me a bit like a snide mockery, to be honest. And I find that can be quite jarring.
Yeah, that's a weird thing, because I think the more I watch him, the more I think I find a certain warmth in his films. But it depends. It changes from film to film.
Yeah.
And it also changes with me, you know, depending what kind of mood I'm in. And that is something that I think his films are more changeable for me than perhaps other films where I watched them the first time. And every time I watch them after that, it's the same experience, and I might like that. But with Altman, my experience of watching them definitely changes from time to time to a remarkable extent.
I think that that's testament to how idiosyncratic I think he is, that you do sometimes have to be on that wavelength or it's not going to land. And Gossard Fark is the extreme example, but I think with other of his films, I can start watching it thinking, I remembered liking this last time I watched it. And then at some point I'm rewatching it going like, no, it's not landing. I'm not in the mood for this. I'm not quite right for this at this moment. And I know full well 6 months, a year down the line, I could try the film again and it would land. That's testament that he makes these very odd, interesting films that they can just repel as well as entice, depending on the viewer's mood.
Absolutely. Now, I think the thing that we said at the time was that a lot of his films, I think we all said at the time, the Altman-esque for us is very much these sprawling depictions of societies, of certain kind of groups where you've got a huge ensemble cast. It's very much this, you know, Where's Waldo thing, where you have, it feels like 100 different characters, all with their different subplots. Now, having watched this retrospective of Altman, I have to say that while I still think that there is that kind of Altman-esque, for instance, in Nashville or in Gosford Park, there's also a couple of films of his that feel very, very different, that are much more theatrical, much more stage-like. And I think one film that you mentioned back then is one that I only watched for the first time during this retrospective. And I think that's what we want to focus on for this espresso, namely the film Three Women from 1977. So when you mentioned it back then, do you remember what you said about it or how you felt about it?
What I can remember at the time is that it was probably the biggest surprise, just how different it is to his other films or what people would normally consider to be Altman-esque. And that it was a really pleasant surprise. And definitely within that view of Altman has contempt for his characters, has sympathy for his characters, this was one of the films where it suddenly clicked that even if he's presenting them as slightly idiotic, I got to see the sympathy he had for them. And I think this was a film that kind of clicked to me feeling quite a bit warmer by Altman, because it was, didn't feel like it was him ticking a box of cliches. It felt very original. It felt very unique. And I think I was entranced by it. It was the one I watched where I left the cinema having had a real cinematic experience, which was also enhanced by it being quite a small cinema and Edgar Wright was in there with me. So I think he was two seats along on this retrospective. So that was the other thing I can remember, that he was in there watching it with me.
Okay. That is a very strange experience, I think. Edgar Wright is perhaps not the first person I would think of when I think of sitting at the cinema and watching an Altman movie, especially Three Women. I think at the time you also mentioned that the film kind of prefigures something like David Lynch's Mulholland Drive. I also think it harkens back to Ingmar Bergman's Persona, because it's also, again, very much a film. I'm not sure whether you want to call it a surreal or absurdist film, but it's a film about its women characters and basically how over time it becomes more and more difficult to draw a line between who's who. You've got two very different actresses. You've got Shelley Duvall once again and Sissy Spacek playing two characters that seem to be very, very different. But then they start to kind of almost melt into each other in weird ways. Is this a film that when you watched it, you immediately thought, okay, I see what he's doing here. I understand what this is about.
I mean, in the sense maybe that what he is trying to do here is confuse and unsettle. And in that extent, I really enjoyed it because of it. The sense of the uncanny that Lynch has, I think I really got from that viewing. And that I really enjoyed. There was an element, I think, with parts of it that I have a moment thinking, oh, he's falling into a bit of his old tricks. Like, very much Shelley Duvall's character sort of comes across as an idiot, that she has no idea how unpopular, that no one is actually interested in her. And I was watching this and thinking, oh, he's doing it again. This is, you know, his slightly being mean again. And then as things become more unsettling and someone is, clearly the Sissy Spacek character is trying to become her. And that process of merging is like, well, there must be something there for someone to be going on this journey. Suddenly, the dynamic, what was interesting about it, seemed to stem from a starting point that I'd immediately jumped to the conclusion of, like, oh, this is him up to his usual tricks. And then he did something very different with it, and suddenly I was really enraptured, and I got to care for Shelley Duvall's character, which is quite rare for an Altman film, I think. And because of that, I think stuff was landing. When it was being unsettling, when it was being grotesque, I didn't feel that was Altman's message. I didn't feel he was lecturing me about something in the wider world being grotesque. I couldn't explain it, but it was landing. It had that sort of quality of the unearthly, and I really enjoyed that.
I think the unearthly, I think that very much also fits my impression of the film. It, again, like Lynch or like certain Bergman films, it has this dreamlike quality, but it never quite lets you say, okay, this is clearly a dream. It's still set in a real world. I mean, as you said, you've got this Shelley Duvall character. She plays Millie Lamoureux, and she's someone who quite clearly desperately wants to be popular. She wants to be liked. She wants to also present herself as someone who is liked. She wants to, I mean, when she basically meets this Sissy Spacek character, Pinky Rose, they basically start sharing a flat, and Millie keeps saying, oh, these people, they really like me. I'm really popular. You know, I'm famous for my dinner parties. This guy, he would totally be into me. He's got a cold that he can't shake. And it's quite clear that everyone else disdains her. Everyone else kind of, they make jokes about her while she's in earshot. It's quite clear that she's, yes, there's a pathetic element to her, but you also feel that these people around her, they're really nasty to her, and there's no good reason why they are nasty to that extent. You understand why they might not like her, but it's like they perform their sense of cringe about her and make it into this, yeah, let's bully her.
Going back to sort of Lynch and the sort of dreamlike status of her, I think where it works is that sense of emotion of these people mock me to my face. When you watch it, you feel how that must feel emotionally for her, even though she's sort of denying it. And it's tapping into sort of an intense dreamlike emotion that, like, Lynch does in something like Mulholland Drive, where almost by not being linear, not being obvious, the emotional punch hits so much harder. And there's definitely that with her story. And I think it's Shelley Duvall gives an amazing performance in this, because I buy that she is aware of, on some level, she's aware of that level of rejection, and that she's almost whistling in the dark. The constant insistence that she's popular is sort of protesting too much. And it's a difficult balance to get right, that you want to buy this character. And I think she lands it absolutely perfectly as a performance, that then suddenly I really cared for her. I really cared that, yeah, I worried how traumatic it would be if she finally broke down and accepted she wasn't popular. But then you also fear how bad it would be if she actually became popular, because she's probably not equipped emotionally to handle it. And I was really caught up in that story, so that when I think Pinky becomes part of her life, I had no idea where it was going to go. If it was someone who was maybe a male admirer, or one of her friends decided to actually tell her the truth, that would feel like a more conventional story, and I'd be interested in that. But Pinky comes in, and it never goes down an obvious route. So again, I think the sort of dreamlike quality, you don't know what the next scene is going to be between them, but I found myself really caught up emotionally on what could happen next.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, this Pinky Rose character, the Sissy Spacek character, she's, in some ways, she's even more cringy than Millie. She comes across like she's, I don't know, an 8-year-old in the body of a 14-year-old who doesn't know anything about the world. She seems to be a complete hayseed. She comes from Texas. They both come from Texas. But with Pinky, you definitely have the impression, like, she walked straight off the set of Little House on the Prairie or something. And later on, her parents turn up, and they seem to be straight out of the 1930s Great Depression. It's definitely, there's an element of unrealness here already. But then what happens is that, in a way, because Millie gets so much crap from the world around her, she starts to offload that onto Pinky, that it's Pinky that is ruining her life. If it wasn't for Pinky, she could have the life that she wants to have. She could be the person she wants to be. And then it tips, because then something happens that causes Pinky to turn into a very different character, and it suddenly seems like she's trying to steal Millie's identity in a quite frightening way, I would say.
I mean, I know from reading about the film that it apparently came to Altman in a dream.
Makes sense.
And that identity theft feels the most dreamlike moment, that would have been something in a dream where someone felt, oh, this person that I had down as being one type of character is now somehow also someone else, or becoming someone else, or trying to become someone else. That's quite a sort of unsettling dreamlike idea. And yeah, it is one of the best strengths in this film, that change and that identity theft, because first time I saw it, didn't see it coming. And it's played beautifully and unsettlingly, and you never get your feet on the ground as to what's happening. You can understand emotionally, you understand emotions of jealousy and betrayal, but you don't have a nice linear plot where, betrayed because she did this. It's just a feeling. It's just the sort of atmosphere that is constantly building up. And I think that's something I really enjoyed about this film.
Absolutely. It's also, I think it's a great showcase for Shelley Duvall and Sissy Spacek, because Sissy Spacek quite literally kind of plays two different characters before the event and after the event. And she's very credible in both. I mean, it's the heightened, totally heightened, her childlike quality at the beginning, and then her horrible teenager-like thing. I mean, both of those, very different, but totally believable. But also Shelley Duvall, who stays the same character, it seems, but at first, she's really this vapid airhead, and then she becomes someone who's more and more frightened by just how much she's out of her depth at what's happening. And I think Shelley Duvall is someone who's, I would say it's easy to underestimate her, because she always seems like a bit of a cartoon character, which I think is easy also. It's easy to think that, that must be easy. They're one-dimensional, but they are not. And she's definitely not one-dimensional here. Even when she's vapid, there's more complexity there, more going underneath the surface. And once she realizes that something really frightening is happening in her life and threatening to take that life from her, I think it is, from the Shelley Duvall performances I've seen, whether it's in Altman or elsewhere, it's definitely one of the strongest.
Yeah, definitely, I'd agree to that. And I think as performances go, where I would say Lynchian is a good parallel is, in both cases, I think they're taking, like you said, almost these recognizable stereotypes. They're characters from melodrama. And you sort of quite immediately pick up that sort of basic level understanding of who they are and what they are. It's just then what they do next is not the norm. And I think Lynch plays with that a lot. And this is, I think, Altman's playing in the same, with the same set of toys and doing the same thing, that you recognize characters walk in, like, and you immediately go, oh yeah, that's a swaggering cowboy or whatever. You get their number immediately, and it's not like a mystery. It's not like that's wrong. It's just where the film will take you with that is not where you're ever going to see it going. And I think that's a very interesting way of handling, like, characters from almost soap opera and melodrama, that you think, well, these archetypes are interesting, but what can I do with them?
Absolutely. At the time, if I remember correctly, you said something like, if Altman had made this film 10, 15 years later, it would be a terribly self-indulgent film. If the later Altman had made the film, it would be an appalling film. So I don't know whether you remember saying that, but do you remember what made you say so?
I think probably it's the confidence of where he was here in his career. There was a level of bloody-mindedness that I am making the film I want to make. Because I do think as well, if you watch a sort of Altman retrospective, after his sort of heyday, you start entering a period where there's lots of films that I don't think even he knew what he was making. I think he's caught between wanting to make a good film, but also not quite knowing what the audience might want. And I think where I was coming from with this statement is, this is a film made by someone with both the confidence and talent to not care what the audience might want. There's no sense to which he thought, well, I better put this scene in here to make this film popular. It's completely divorced from that. And I do wonder whether 15 years later he would have had the confidence to do that. whether he would have thought, oh, hang on, I can't have another box office failure, or I'm working in the studio system, the studio have started arguing with me about it, it's not worth the fight, I'll make that change. So I do wonder whether it was partly that he wasn't as confident, and also just, you know, this is peak Altman. This is, you know, and talent probably does decline. So I think what I love about this film is how bloody-minded it feels that it is not making, it's not giving you any concessions at all. And I think that disappears from Altman films going forward. I think he just isn't confident to just do what he wants to do, and they feel slightly messy and confused because of that.
I do think Altman was able to put messiness to good use in a lot of his films. Again, this Where's Waldo notion of society, and here it focuses so much on these characters. It's perhaps that's something that we can quickly talk about afterwards. It feels like, to some extent, the three women of the title, it's mostly about two women, and the third woman, I think, is perhaps underserved a bit, and I think for me that's perhaps a bit of a weakness of the film. But I agree, it's also the kind of film that probably in the 1980s and 1990s weren't easy to make. It feels very much like the 70s had an appetite for this kind of thing. The 70s were a time when you could make films that didn't feel like they had to do the four-quadrant thing, they didn't have to be blockbusters. They could be strange and idiosyncratic, and they could basically just, you know, confuse the hell out of people for a purpose. But still, basically, people would come out talking about it, not going, oh, you know, yeah, that was a great film. You know, they blew up that Death Star really good. Nothing like that. This is the kind of film where you come out and first and foremost, you're like, what did I just see?
I mean, definitely. And I think even like you said, the title seems almost a slight misnomer. And you do get, again, the impression that a lot of this film was, if not made up as they were filming it, there's an improvisational feel to it. There's a free-form nature to it that probably, while they were making it, they realised that they had gold with the Shelley Duvall, Sissy Spacek, the combination there, that it kind of was, that's where we've got the stuff to build more of the film around. So it probably emerged from the making that was so important. And as a result, I think the sort of the third woman, the sort of Willie, kind of feels slightly detached, that you have these two characters who are in some sort of slightly twisted codependent relationship. And then this third character is sort of like, you know, bystander looking in through the window at it all. It's, But again, I think it's almost that level of, it's not super coherent. It's not what a screenwriter would say, well, you've got a script called Three Women. The three women characters must intertwine to reach a sort of third act conclusion. There's something fun about the fact that, no, it doesn't do that. You might expect the third woman, maybe they'll all start dressing like the third woman. That'll be what we expect in this film. No, it's not going to go down that route. That's one of the things to the film's favour.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I have to say, in some ways, I mentioned that it felt more stage-like than many of his other films, even though it very clearly uses, you know, the imagery of film. But the language it speaks is one that reminds me of, for instance, Harold Pinter in the 70s. And I think in that respect, also the, you know, 10, 15 years later, it would have been terribly self-indulgent. I think there's something like that here, in that this was still a time where you could tell such stories and it would feel fresh and original, and 10, 15 years later, it would feel like self-parody. And there are even moments in Three Women where I'm almost wondering, is there a certain kind of sly humor in some of this? You know, so for instance, the two ancient parents that come to visit Pinky, and they seem to be at least 30, 40 years too old to be her parents. And the father keeps kind of nodding off, and he has to be woken up again and again. It almost feels a bit like, at times, it feels a bit like Altman almost has fun with and makes fun of overt symbolism. You know, it's a kind of film that I think you could absolutely imagine a certain kind of pretentious critic to, you know, lecture about for 2-3 hours without a single pause. And I don't think that the film itself is pretentious. I think the film itself, it's, as you said, dreamlike. It's elusive, but at the same time, it tries to trigger something in its audience. Perhaps the same kind of fugue state that the film kind of depicts. And I also think that it's one of those films which, ironically, after we've been talking about it for almost half an hour, I think it's the kind of film that defies analysis to some extent.
I think that's something that you come out having been affected, and it's quite hard to know why or even what Altman was aiming for. I mean, you know, yeah, it is quite a hard film to analyze, even though there's lots of interesting ideas in it. There's lots of interesting twists and turns. I think one thing which I really liked about this film, which again sets it against an issue I have with some of the Altman films, is I do feel sometimes he is making things up as he goes along to the detriment of the film. So he has these large, sprawling cast dramas, and then near the end, well, I mean, there's going to have to be a boom, there's going to have to be a death, there's going to have to be a big event. And it often feels to me like, well, he didn't know how to end it any other way. He had no other way. He had this sprawling tale. He needs something that can be like a cap to, we've just watched 3 hours of sprawl. You can't just end it there. Let's have a big thing. And I was quite cynical about that. And weirdly, this film, although things sort of build a little bit to a head, you have like traumatic moments near the end which seem to then change everything for all the characters. I think because it has this sort of weird, surreal fugue state as you're watching it, it doesn't feel jarring. It fits what you've watched so far. And the big events aren't even, I think, necessarily important. They're just another strange thing that you can't quite explain, or what the consequences are is not explained. And I think, again, that's why I think of his films, this one I think I rate really highly.
Mm-hmm. Since you mentioned Mulholland Drive, I mentioned Persona. Do you think it would make for a good triple bill with those two films? Like three women, three films?
I mean, I recently rewatched Mulholland Drive, and one of my first thoughts leaving it was Mulholland Drive and Three Women is a double bill. It would be an excellent double bill. And yeah, you could add Persona to it. And I think they all play in interesting different ways in a similar area. So yeah, I think they would definitely work as a triple bill. And I can't think that there are many films that you could double bill Three Women with. So I think we've probably found the few that would work. Otherwise, it would just be too jarring.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Ironically, we just, the Rex, that cinema that I mentioned before, it just started showing Jenna Rowland's retrospective. And we've just seen one of the films so far, opening night. I'm not sure whether you've seen that one. In that one, you've got Jenna Rowland's character. She's a stage actress, and she stars in a play called The Second Woman. And it also plays with this to some extent. So I wonder whether the 70s were just a very, very good time when it comes to these kind of nightmares, dreams about women that leave you kind of troubled and unsettled, but fascinated.
There's definitely a mood in the 70s that of darkness and depression that will fit a story like this really well. And the films that are quite happy to leave you at the end with more of a, huh, then a sort of, like you said, punch the sky moment. And again, I really enjoyed the ending to this. The ending to this, I don't know what it means. I don't quite understand it, but it works as an ending. It feels like a satisfying place to leave this surreal, slightly plotless adventure we've all been on. And that, I think, is a talent. You couldn't predict it. You'd think on paper, how can you end the film like this? But watching it on the big screen, I felt really satisfied by the ending, and I walked out thinking, oh no, that was a film.
Absolutely. And I think that probably is also a good point at which we can end it here, because I think all of our listeners who are well, you know, versed with the Altman of Nashville, of The Long Goodbye, of McCabe and Mrs. Miller, if you want to watch an Altman that's still recognizably Altman but also very, very different, definitely do seek out Three Women. It's well worth it. You might not like it, you might not understand it, but it's definitely one of the more unique original films that he's done, and he's made lots of unique original films.
And I would put money that David Lynch saw this and thought, huh, you can make films this way. And that would have been an influence on him. And for that alone, for the Lynchian elements, if you like David Lynch, then this is a useful proto-pre-Lynch piece of cinema that it's worth seeing how he became who he became and what were the antecedents to him.
Absolutely. Almost makes you think that we should perhaps at some point do an episode about Lynch, don't you think?
That's a good idea, Matt.
So on that note, thank you very much, Alan, for a great conversation once again.
Cheers, thanks.
And thanks as always to our listeners. And we will be back again very, very soon with a damn fine cup of culture, damn fine espressos, and all the film talk you care to listen to. Goodbye.
Bye.